This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
A celebrated local award-winning author, cartographer, and popular lecturer, history lecturer, and tour guide. You can sign up for his classes over there at the Senior Center anytime. Just give the Senior Center a call at
974-6538.
That's what it is, 974-6538. Rick has been joining us now. We're doing a series looking at the 25 most important Civil War battles that took place here in Virginia. And we are currently talking about number 12. All of our previous conversations and all of the conversations in this series will be podcast online at wina.com and at cvillepodcast.com. And we're talking about Chancellorsville, but it's such a huge one that we had to split it up and introduce it last week, and we talk about the battle this week. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. So I guess we still, even though we introduced it last week, I have to kind of set the stage again, don't I, really quickly?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's late April, early May, 1863. Joseph Hooker is the new commander of the Army of the Potomac, the Union Army, 135,000 men. He's facing Robert E. Lee at Fredericksburg with 60,000. I'll do this as quickly as possible. He decides that the way to get Robert E. Lee out of Fredericksburg is to leave 40,000 of his men in front of Robert E. Lee to pin him there, move the bulk of his army up the Rappahannock River, upstream.
West, yeah.
West, cross the Rappahannock and the Rapidan and get to Chancellorsville, which is almost 10 miles due west of Fredericksburg, putting him then with the largest part of his army in Robert E. Lee's left rear.
Yeah.
So that's the situation.
Out on, which we know here in Charlottesville,
on Route 3.
When you drive to Fredericksburg, you
go
up, 20, which dead ends into 3, right in the Chancellorsville area. Right?
That's right. That's right. And again, Chancellorsville is nothing but a house. It wasn't a town. And it's in a clearing surrounded by the wilderness. So like we said last week, this could have been the first battle of the wilderness. That could have been the name of this battle easily.
Yeah.
So Robert E. Lee, and I made an allusion.
And the goal, of course, on Hooker, in the Union side, is trying to find a way to get to Richmond. That's what they're doing.
Get to Richmond, and the easiest way to do that is to pry Robert E. Lee out of those amazing, that amazing defensive position just behind Fredericksburg.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to get him out into the open and hopefully get into an open field battle where Hooker has 135,000 men versus Robert E. Lee's 60.
And as we've talked previously, efforts to come up the river and up the peninsula did not work.
Against Richmond.
That's
right.
The 7 years, the seven battles.
7 days.
7 days
battles,
battle,
right.
Yeah. And efforts to come in from the west weren't really feasible because they didn't have the supply lines to support a invasion of Richmond.
That's right. That's right. To attack Richmond, right.
So they're having to figure out how to come down basically what's now the Route 1 or 95 corridor.
Right, and they still hadn't gotten to the point of the war. It was somebody like Ulysses S. Grant that would actually realize and say, look, guys, the object isn't necessarily Richmond. The object really is Robert E. Lee's army. If we can destroy Robert E. Lee's army and destroy his ability to protect the Confederate capital at Richmond, then the war's over. And eventually, Grant's not on the scene yet. We've got Joseph Hooker fighting Joe Hooker, and I made an allusion last week to him carousing, and I'll just answer that right now in case folks are wondering out there, because the legend was for years, I know you're wondering, inquiring minds want to know.
Well, when you talk about carousing, of course, yeah.
The legend has been for years that Hookers got their name from Joseph Hooker, fighting Joe Hooker. But people have discovered that there are plenty of references to prostitutes, ladies of the night, as hookers prior to the Civil War. So we need to lay that to rest.
Okay, so it's not his...
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the situation. So on May 1st, Robert E. Lee takes 50,000 of his men and marches west to confront fighting Joe Hooker at Chancellorsville, and leaves 10,000 behind to face Sedgwick with his 40,000 at Fredericksburg. The moment that Lee encounters the Federal forces just outside of Chancellorsville, Hooker withdraws back into the wilderness. And as I said last week, that's the moment, really. He gave up the initiative. He lost the fight. at that moment.
Which is what we've been seeing from these Union generals throughout the war.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
They push just a little bit, and then they pull back. Push a little bit, pull back.
Why? Well, Robert E. Lee is racking up an amazing number of victories against larger armies. You know, with the help of people like Stonewall Jackson.
Smart guy, but some of these victories are handed to him by people like Hooker.
Who are too timid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, that night, the night of May 1st, they find a guide who can lead a portion of the Confederate Army all the way around Hooker's forces and attack him from the west. So, this, in all of the military manuals, this is an incredible no-no. You're not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to divide your forces in the face of an enemy who outnumbers you. You're just not supposed to do it. You're inviting disaster. Robert E. Lee decides to do that, and he meets that evening, and it's a famous scene. It's been painted a dozen times. He meets with Stonewall Jackson, and he says, look, we've got this route. And it's going to take you
all... Who is Stonewall Jackson is like one of his...
A wing of his army. He's one of his wing commanders. He's one of his corps commanders. He meets with Stonewall Jackson that night. And Lee shows him this route that has been discovered by this guy. Now, the problem with Hooker's position is the right flank out toward the west is, as they said in those days, in the air. And what that means is it's not grounded on anything. It's not curved back to protect itself from a flank attack. It's not anchored. That's the word I was looking for. It's not anchored on anything like a river or a stream or a swamp that helps protect it. It's in the air. It's open for a flank attack. So Lee asks Jackson, will you make this march? And Jackson says, yes. And Lee says, what will you take with you? And Jackson says, my entire corps. So that means that Lee is dividing his army in the face of an enemy who outnumbers him. And Jackson, the next morning, sets off, or early in the morning, it's still dark, sets off with 26,000 men to march by a circuitous route, about 14 miles, across the face of Hooker's force to get at them from the west, hopefully undetected. And of course, they're being led by this guide and cavalry, and cavalry are guarding his flanks so that Union probes can't attack him. And Jackson sets off on that amazing flank march.
We're talking with Rick Britton, exploring the 25 most important battles of the Civil War that took place here in Virginia. We're on number 12, and this is part two of the Battle of Chancellorsville. So they're out there on the plank road, which is Route 3.
Uh-huh.
Near where 20 runs into 3.
Yeah, further to the west this took place. Just a little bit further to the west.
Okay. And so Lee splits his army and sends Stonewall Jackson to go back around Hooker's...
Get around his right flank,
yeah,
and roll up his right flank. It's an amazing decision, and it's incredibly risky. The reason you shouldn't...
So the teachers at VMI would say, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Stupid?
Because by dividing a smaller force into smaller chunks, you invite the enemy to gobble any one of those smaller chunks of your army.
Yeah.
You're incredibly vulnerable that
Didn't
way.
The Union troops know that they were doing this, though? I mean, that's one thing I've
there
learned
were
from
some...
our talks is that they sort of knew what the other guys were doing.
Yeah, they had an inkling, and actually that corps that was out on Hooker's right flank, the 11th Corps, they were actually warned, but they thought it was going to be okay. They just, you know, just didn't take the precautions that they needed to take. So Jackson, this march takes most of May 2nd, 1863. He gets out astride their right flank and sets an entire line so that when he attacks, he can just roll up their right flank, the entire 11th Corps. And he launches this assault late in the day and succeeds. It's just an amazing attack. It's almost like they're totally surprised. The Confederates come out of the woods preceded by deer and birds and animals. They're driving everything in front of them. And then soon thereafter, the poor Germans, the 11th Corps, is mostly recent German immigrants to the United States. And of course, they don't have the same kind of interest in this war as native-born Americans do. They're the equivalent almost of mercenaries, almost of the Hessians in the American Revolution. They don't have the same vested interest in the war. Jackson totally rolls up the entire 11th Corps. And that's what takes place in the evening of May 2nd. So it's an amazingly successful flank attack. They're driven en route. They're routed. A large number of killed, but especially a large number of captured, because they're just overrun and driven back. Their entire right flank, Hooker's entire right flank, this whole corps and portions of another, completely rolled up. So Jackson, that night, is intent on continuing the attack the morning of May 3rd. And he brought up new units. He did this in a succession of lines. So he brought up new units and decided in the darkness to go out and probe the enemy position. The enemy was actually digging in. The Federals were actually digging in. So Jackson and a small number of staff rode out to the front. And as he was riding back into his own lines, his own men, not knowing that Jackson was in their immediate front, opened fire, and he was mortally wounded.
So he's shot from his horse?
He is shot off his horse. He's hit three times. He's hit twice in the right hand and once in the left arm between the shoulder and the elbow, pretty much shattered that large bone right there in between the shoulder and the elbow. And it's just fortuitous that they're able to bring him back into the Confederate lines. Jackson is taken, of course, out of the battle. He's taken to Guiney's Station, which is south of Fredericksburg, and just a few days later, he dies. And it's the biggest blow, the biggest casualty that Robert E. Lee really has suffered, the biggest loss in terms of one person that Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia has lost in the entire war so far. And of course, Jackson, they had to amputate his left arm. And he lived for a few days. And the famous note, of course, from Robert E. Lee is, you know, Jackson lost his left arm, but I lost my right arm.
Yeah.
Right.
And they have that historic marker, that highway marker out on Route 3.
Right.
Which is about where this took place, right?
Right, where he was mortally wounded, right, which is right close to Route 3. It's actually close to the visitor center, the Chancellorsville Visitor Center. So the next morning, obviously, Jackson's not available. Jackson's mortally wounded is gone from the front. So Jeb Stuart was given command, which is kind of an unusual way to proceed, but the cavalry commander was given command of Jackson's corps and continued with a successful assault on May 3rd. Now, while all of this is happening, Hooker is being driven into a smaller and smaller perimeter in the wilderness. And of course, what Robert E. Lee is intent on doing is driving him up against the Rappahannock River at a place where he can't cross, sealing off the fords from him, denying him the use of the fords, so that eventually, theoretically, it was possible that a large chunk of the Army of the Potomac could have been captured, slammed up against the Rappahannock River and captured there in the wilderness. But meanwhile, back at Fredericksburg, Sedgwick finally attacks. He outnumbers Jubal Early 4-1, but of course, Jubal Early's numbers are worth more in that amazing defensive position at the stone wall right behind the town. Sedgwick finally breaks through that line. So now Robert E. Lee has another force advancing on him from his right rear.
Yeah.
So he divides his army again. He takes forces from his position in front of Hooker, goes back, and over the course of May 4th, 1863, surrounds Sedgwick and drives him back across the Rappahannock at another ford, defeating him at the Battle of Salem Church, and drives Sedgwick back across the Rappahannock. And then, of course, eventually Hooker, with the main body of the Army of the Potomac, also retires back across the Rappahannock. And so concludes the campaign of Chancellorsville. Just an amazing series of audacious moves, again, by Robert E. Lee, once again wresting the initiative from the enemy and really putting them on the defensive when really they should have been on the offensive and had intended to be on the offensive from the very beginning.
Yeah, amazing.
Just an amazing feat.
Yeah, and then this is just another instance when America stood up and said, who is this Robert E. Lee?
Right, who is this guy?
Yeah, and this name must have been thrown around the White House quite a bit.
What are we going to do about this guy? We got to stop this guy.
Good stuff. And so next week we'll look at the Battle of
Brandy Station.
Brandy Station, the summer of 1863, shortly, just a few weeks after this Battle of Chancellorsville.
Right, and the prelude to Gettysburg.
Rick Britton online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.